Good evening, and Jeanette, thank you so much for the warm welcome. It's great to be here and have an opportunity, I think, to share some of the great things that are happening in the Waterloo Region District School Board, but of course, for me personally, just to also talk about something that I'm quite passionate about. In our conversation and emails around what the best approach might be for tonight, I thought I'd give you a little bit of a perspective from the Ministry of Education and the school board, but then spend most of the time talking about what I think is the key issue in Ontario today. So to that end, the ministry, the school board, and what the future holds, I see as a bit of a triangulation. So in terms of the Ministry of Education, they typically have high-level goals that all school boards are meant to develop their strategic plans around. And this really sets priorities for all school boards in the province. So achieving excellence, the incremental improvement of always trying to make student learning and student achievement better all the time. Ensuring that we have equity programs in place that children can be inspired to reach their potential. A new one, promoting well-being. This is just a more recent focus of the Ministry of Education, but I think there's lots of evidence to show the health of our kids in terms of mental health, feeling like they fit in, physical health, having a nice rounded lifestyle is important, and it's great to see them actually setting some good things in motion for that. And of course, public confidence. We're always striving to improve what's happening in education, and we welcome feedback, ideas, and so on. So to this end, the ministry has developed this document called 21st Century Competencies, things that are important in sort of the broad sweep of learning that they feel are important for all Ontario students. Now, this is just one paragraph that I clipped out of that document, but it is something that I think shows the ministry is really thinking about how does education, what's happening in Ontario schools right now, how does it relate to the future? And so they have some particular things that they're paying attention to. What are the changes in the workforce? We all know that we're moving from sort of industrial models into rapidly transforming working situations, startup businesses, all of that's changing a lot. And so they're paying attention to that. What does that mean for learning? How are we preparing students for what we think the workforce might look like in 15 years? It's an interesting question. And I think there's a growing recognition, too, that the idea, and you'll see it in some of the board documentation, the idea of student voice. What do students themselves think that they need to learn? What kind of tools do they want to use? So typically, things, the way they organize it, are in the cognitive area, intra and interpersonal. Lots of information on that. And one statement that I just wanted to highlight for you, that's a large document. This is obviously just a small piece, but they are thinking very specifically about the role of technology. And I had a chance to stop in at the sessions here tonight. How do we use technology not to take over the schools, but to use it in really thoughtful ways that actually improve instruction, support teachers in differentiating instruction? How can we use different types of assessment? The gentleman that was speaking here in the library had a great comment about using technology just to differentiate the way students can actually demonstrate their learning. Students have different strengths, and so different ways to capture that is a good thing. On the school board side, I won't spend too much time on this because all of this information is on the board website. But just to point out, the Waterloo Region District School Board has just recently developed a new strategic plan. So they have three key things that they're going after. Students are first. They want to make sure that student learning is key in all aspects of the planning. That we have these partnerships of staff, families, caregivers, and students working together to all support student learning. And this last one, I was really pleased to see it in there because I know when you look across the province, many school boards don't have this one in their plan. The idea of innovation and what that can mean for student learning, and also the ways that staff can deliver their work too. So three focuses in particular for Waterloo this year were mathematics, graduation rates, student and staff well-being. And you can see the linkages there back to the ministry. But I think for this discussion, you got your timer on. The question is the future. So I want to just paint a bit of a quick picture here. There's no doubt things are moving mobile. Desktops are being phased out, and certainly within Waterloo Region schools. All schools are on a program right now where as they trade in their desktops, they're being replaced with mobile equipment. The goal right now is that schools would hit roughly an 80% mobile to 20% desktop ratio, I would say sometime in the next 3-year window. The truth of the matter is, they don't make that many desktops anymore. It's not the way people work. It's not the way you use technology. People use smartphones, they use tablets and iPads and Windows tablets and Androids and so on. And so education needs to keep up with the way the world's moving. Similarly, the picture on the right, we came up with a bit of a phrase in the IT department, the network's the thing. And what we mean by that is it's really important that our students have access to good quality digital resources in a robust environment, and they work properly the way you need them to when you need them as a teacher. And the world diagram is just my way of stopping to think about, when you think about mobile technology, it's all about apps and browsers. It's not so much about stuff's installed on your computer. And we saw some great examples tonight using Google Drive and Google Classroom as part of the classroom demonstrations. Now, I had a chance to hear Jamie Kassab speak. He works at Google, has the best job title ever, Chief Education Evangelist. What a great title. I've had the opportunity to hear him speak on two different occasions. But I've adapted the question that he asked when I first saw him speak. But it's a good one because it puts the perspective through the eyes of the child. For a child that's born this year in 2017, that includes my grandchild that will be born in September, the worst technology that they will ever use is, you fill in the blank, Samsung phone, maybe not the 7s, they're pretty dicey, but 8, iPhone 8's coming out, you have Windows tablets, you have the new iPads. For us, that's pretty incredible. That's the new technology. But for a child born this year, it's also the worst technology. And so the world is changing very quickly. And I think that's a really interesting perspective to think about when we work our way through education. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this slide, but just to point out that industry predictors, companies like Infotech and Gartner, they flag these 5 areas: mobility, security, and I'll say, and privacy with that one. Cloud technologies, such as the Google suite of tools that we saw demonstrated tonight, social media and big data. They call these the 5 unstoppable forces. I think what's important to think about from an education perspective as well as a society perspective is they call them the unstoppable forces because they're here whether you like them or not. They're not going to go away. And I think the question is, for work, for school, for educating kids, for the functioning of society, the question is, how do we learn about them? How do we leverage them? How do we control them? How do we learn digital responsibilities? And so the theoretical $64,000 question, what does the future hold? There's many people in the world right now that kind of argue that schools are going over here and societies are going over there. And that's why I posed that question at the beginning. What does the future really hold? One thing we know it holds is exponential change. When you look at the rate of change that's happening in society right now, many people are predicting the amount of change that we as adults have seen in the last 100 years will now happen in about 10 years. And so we're on the sharp uprise of the red line, and it's only going to keep going faster and faster. So if we take sort of a Canadian perspective on this, there was a document developed called the Canada's Talent Strategy, and they started to take a look at what do we think the workforce will be like 2020 and beyond. really interesting. One of the things they found is in Canada, they estimate 182,000 jobs that will be in technology-related fields specifically, and we really don't have the capacity for that. You can see the breakdown in the provinces, 76,000 jobs in Ontario alone related to those areas. Now, I got this little clip just this week from Forbes magazine, and it's talking about, so you're not a computer science or a tech major, but everybody needs some exposure to learn how to use technology and how to apply technology. It's not to say that it has to take over everything. So I'll just underscore that. But we're faced with ever creeping in this idea of modernizing workplaces. What's the role of robots? Not sure if you know, for example, self-driving cars are not that far away. In fact, they've passed legislation recently in Ontario that they are going to start testing them here. I know the Google cars were one example. So. Will this be the car that your child drives or rides in, maybe rides to school in? Anybody here a Tesla enthusiast? All right, here you go. What's that? Oh, fantastic.
He's driven a Tesla.
Wow, beauty. That's awesome. Did he order, did he pre-order one?
He's only a student.
He's only a student, yeah. All right. How about the role of changing in transportation, the idea of delivery? This is actually being tested and working now in some of the United States. Actually, I'll send you all these videos. I'm not going to play them all through tonight, but they actually are pretty interesting. This article I found really interesting. It was on CBC News, actually within the last 2 weeks. And it was talking about this whole environment of robots and humans working together. It was really interesting. And they were referring to them as sort of co-relationships, robots and humans being co-workers, in effect. This particular example, the robot actually makes most of the pizza, but there is a human there with certain roles at the beginning and at the end, and of course you could imagine your pizza being connected to the drone delivery system and all those kinds of things. And I thought, this seems futuristic, and yet, behind the scenes, if you watch for articles around really big companies, the Bay, was one recent one, how they're modernizing their warehouse systems, just-in-time delivery, all those kinds of things. Really interesting how people and machines are actually working together in a new society. Now, this one I found was really interesting as well. There's actually a hotel in Japan that's staffed by robots. The robot is the person, if you would, that greets you at the desk. They can take your check-in, give you your room key, all that stuff. It's here. I'm going to skip that video though, just because of time. This might be high on your list. In fact, I was asking Jeanette if it was on her high list. Robotic vacuum cleaners. You can program them to vacuum your house, and they can move around. They can see. They don't bump into stuff. It's pretty interesting. I was thinking I might like one of those. I'll play a bit of this video, but I'll fast forward through it. It's just the idea of using technology to actually create. And again, I stress, it's not to replace the kind of creating that we do in schools, but just to look ahead around, what does creating, say, in 3D space look like? How do you share things that you produce? So this video was actually produced by a teacher in the Upper Grand District School Board who had the privilege of borrowing some demo equipment for a while. And what you'll see in here is a student that has two sort of, well, they look like game sticks. And as they move them around, the computer can actually record the movements. And the movements, if you're good at it, become art. And it's art that you can share in electronic ways. See in the bottom right little corner there, the student's holding the drawing stick, and he's drawing an arrow. And then the computer is rendering the action and movement through the space. So it has ways to capture color, to capture movement. But doesn't that intrigue you? Does it make you ask questions such as, what will an art gallery of the future look like? How will an electronic art gallery compare to what we think of as a traditional art gallery? How will they coexist? What will that be like for society? New opportunities for people's preferences for expression. That's the part that intrigued me. Catch the last little bit here. So these students are exploring a 3D space that you can see through the goggles. It's like a virtual reality world. But maybe that opens up opportunities for students to take different types of field trips. So for example, maybe you're actually seeing the undersea. Maybe you're wandering around on the bottom floor of the ocean. Now I did find a couple of interesting things just maybe pertinent for this audience.
Agrobotics is the leader in drone technology, helping growers make more informed decisions for their businesses. What sets us apart at Agrobotics is that we're the complete solution, both the hardware and the software, and we're 100% focused on agriculture. With the Agrobotics Enduro Quad, you can pull up to your field, roll it out of the case, and set it up in just a couple of minutes. You can design a flight to survey up to 160 acres with just a few clicks. FongLens is Agrobotics' data processing platform. You upload your images, and within hours, you get back actionable intelligence. Everything that comes out of it is 100% purpose-built for agriculture. We start with the baseline, the NDVI, what we call the Field Health Report. That gives growers a bird's-eye view of their fields and shows them where the crops are healthy and where they need attention. With the outputs from FarmLens, you can see if your irrigation is working efficiently and effectively. You can reduce pesticide and fertilizer use, thereby lowering costs while also increasing yields. That's good for your business. One of our software team's main objectives is keeping FarmLens simple, so the solutions you need are accessible. When you work with Agrobotics, we'll push past the hype and show you how to get an immediate return on investment with drones and data processing. Because we offer both the hardware and the software, we're the most convenient, most cost-effective, and most robust solution for growers and the people who serve them.
So, arguably a commercial, but it's an intriguing idea around the idea of simply optimizing your business. Can you do more that's less labor, perhaps, more cost-efficient? And I also found this interesting one called FarmBot.
When presented with the current food production system, one cannot look past how broken it is. We have surrendered our knowledge and control over how our food is being produced, and as a result, we're destroying our health and the environment. It's a shame.
Think well-being.
We're here to change that. 3 years ago, I had an idea for a new paradigm of food production. The idea lies at the intersection of automation, the open source DIY maker movement, and small-scale polycrop farming. And over the last 3 years, a small, dedicated team and I have been working to make this idea a reality. Introducing FarmBot Genesis, humanity's first open-source CNC farming machine. FarmBot moves around in the XYZ space, day and night, 7 days a week, growing food for you, just the way you want it to be grown. FarmBot precisely sows seeds in any pattern and density you want, and then waters them efficiently, the exact amount that each plant needs based on its type, its age, soil conditions, the local weather, and your growing preferences. FarmBot can grow a wide variety of crops all in the same area at the same time, while each plant is cared for individually in an optimized, automated way. By growing many types of plants at once, your garden will benefit from the natural advantages of polycropping and crop rotation, while you and your family gain from a healthy and varied diet. Using the onboard camera and advanced computer vision software, FarmBot diligently monitors your garden, detects weeds as soon as they emerge, and then buries them under the soil. With the soil sensor, FarmBot can show you how your garden changes over time, enabling smarter, more efficient farming with each passing season. With FarmBot, your garden will flourish, your plants will thrive, and you will gain access to fresh food grown right in your backyard with the practices that you believe in. You control and configure FarmBot using a powerful web-based interface, so no coding is required to grow food. With the Sequence Builder and Scheduler, you combine the most basic operations of FarmBot into custom sequences for seed injection, watering, and even whole regimens for taking care of a plant throughout its life. The drag-and-drop farm designer allows you to graphically design the layout of your plants for a game-like experience that's fun, fast, and easy. You simply press the synchronize button, and FarmBot does the rest. FarmBot's hardware...
Okay, I'm going to leave you on the hook on that one. You'll have to watch it to see how it all turns out. But it's interesting, again, I think wellness, optimizing, and so on. So those are just a few glimpses into the future that I think play a role in what's going to unfold. But I think bringing this back to the idea of what about school? What is it that we should be teaching our students to value what we already know and have, but also to function well in this new future world that we're not sure how fast it's going to come, but I think it is coming. And so in education, we start to think about these kinds of words, and in some of these I was pleased to hear the teachers were using this kind of language or similar language in their presentations tonight. I love the idea of digital flow, because when I hear that word, I think one of the neat things about living right now in 2017 is we're here face to face, hopefully enjoying this experience together, but at the same time, you know, by just a click away on your phone, you can connect with somebody else anywhere else in the world that has an internet connection using Skype or Google Hangouts or any of those kinds of pieces of software. For our children, what will work and maybe future school be like when you simply are allowed to connect to remote users and interface them with face-to-face users, and we're all here in the room together, remotely and face-to-face. It's just a new crowd. It's a new way of collaborating. Wouldn't that be neat if all of our students could have an experience like that as part of their education? Another important thing to think about, and I know this has been on the mind of the school board, is this idea of, there's lots of things about inclusion, but specifically digital inclusion. And what we think about that is, all students should have some access to technology when they need it. Technology needs to be simple to use, it needs to work reliably. We need to make sure teachers have the appropriate training and background knowledge. But I think it's also a statement to say that if a child moves from JK through to grade 12 and they have no digital inclusion experiences, given where we know the future's going, I think we're missing the boat. And so I know the board has a real commitment to making sure that that's part of learning. Opportunities, digital literacies, I'm going to come back to that one And so from a teaching perspective, we start to think about authentic learning. How is learning different when you lift it off of the paper and do things that were not possible before? What does that look like? What about the difference of, for example, if you were, instead of writing on a piece of paper, you were writing in some kind of electronic format, perhaps on a blog, and you're getting comments from other teachers and students around the world? How is that different than just handing a piece of paper into your teacher and getting it back with some red ink on it? It's a different experience. The idea of using technology for positive, making a difference. Lots of examples of that. And solving interesting problems. This is a slide we could probably do a whole night on, but just to give you the flavor, because we did talk earlier about the idea of literacies, this chart sort of breaks up the whole digital world into some things that we think are important for students to learn about. So what about your digital identity? Who are you online? If I knew you online before tonight, and then I met you face to face tonight, would I say, yeah, that's the real you? I recognize your picture and you behave, you talk, the way you write online, sort of symbiotic. Or are you entirely different? Is it good or is it bad? Or is it just is? Those kinds of things. Digital rights. What about copyright, intellectual property, all those kinds of things? We look at digital communications, voice-to-text technology. We saw some of that tonight. Just voice entry into Google. It's pretty powerful. What about using Google Hangouts? What about the idea of technology-mediated relationships? How do you develop a relationship online? I mean, when you're face-to-face, you see body language, you make eye contact, you see a smile. Those kinds of things. Well, how do you go through that process online? After all, our children live at a time when they might know somebody online for their whole life. Maybe never meet them face to face. I mean, there's just some interesting things to think about. Digital security. As our children are growing up, are they learning how to manage their devices, to keep themselves safe online, to not give out personal information? Positive interactions, but still learning the boundaries. Digital health. I know in one of the sessions the question came up about how much screen time. I'm not really sure there's a good answer for that, because you could ask, well, how much paper time, how much pencil time, how much inactivity time. There's lots of those kinds of questions. I think for educators, the real question is, when can technology make a real difference in student learning, and then how can I incorporate that into my classroom processes? We're on for 8:45, right? And then it's like, okay. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about digital resources. In Ontario, there's a couple of sort of provincially done things at the Ministry of Education. One example here is, I put VLE, it's the virtual learning environment. So that's one common system that's available for all students in Ontario publicly funded schools. Licensing a product like that and making it available in the school system goes through a very long and rigorous process to make sure that it has all kinds of safeguards in it, there's privacy, it has the functions in it that students need for learning, that teachers need for managing students in that kind of a learning space. And so those things are kind of vetted. They are on renewable contracts, so nobody gets in for the 20-year window. They come up for renewal about every 4 years or so. There's also a group called OSAPAC, which makes recommendations to the Ministry of Education. I've had the privilege of actually serving on this committee for a number of years. But some of the work and some of the products used in the schools, including recommendations to use the Google suite of tools or Office 365, those tools too have gone through stringent evaluation. So that Google, for example, they had to sign off that they would not mine student data. That Waterloo Region has its own private sort of Google bubble inside the bigger Google structure, and that data is safe there. They don't mine it, they can't use it without breaking the agreement. We had references to school board licensed software. Some of you might have your children using Dreambox, for example, something like that. We also have the virtual library where there's lots of vetted contact. And of course, teachers are free to use professional judgment to use other resources that they think are appropriate for student learning. And I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about a couple of forward-thinking projects that have been involved in the board in the last few years, just to give you a little bit of a sample of what might go on in a classroom. The Futures Forum project specifically was about secondary schools, but the idea could have been actually in any school. New audience member, right on. So in the Futures Forum project, this started out as a project to think about how could we break down the traditional walls of teaching. Instead of having one teacher for one subject, and in the case of, sorry about that, so Google takes over the world here. We actually started this project where we selected seven teachers, one teacher in each of seven different schools, and they were, with professional development support, allowed to develop a new, unique curriculum. The idea was that we wanted to experiment with changing the boundaries. So the kids moved from writing on paper to writing on tools. Now, when this project started, it was a little bit pre-Google Docs, so they were using blogs and other online forums. The classes had to collaborate and produce online newspapers. And so again, there they had the real-world audience. They're still doing inquiry, research, writing revision. But they were also inserting images, making links to videos, and so it was more of a multimedia way of doing some kinds of research. One of the big hits from the students was this idea of the cross-panel novel study. So I didn't have to study the book for the teacher that in my school was studying. I could sign up in your school and study with a different teacher. And the feedback we got from the students was they loved having interaction with more adults. They loved being exposed to different teaching styles, different personalities. Technology is the enabler. We had a video conferencing system that allowed students to talk to the teacher in the other school so they could do group work and interviews and have dialogue, get feedback on their work, all through this different environment. Now, this project actually went on for multiple years, but we did partner up with a research company. And one of the things that they helped us do was interview students, they interviewed teachers and parents, we studied the student assessment. And what we ended up discovering out of this was that students that were taught in this sort of multimedia online environment were actually scoring 3 to 5% higher than they were in traditional classrooms. And so this is at least something very interesting that we were able to sort of demonstrate, and becomes building blocks for thinking about, so what next? What else should we be doing in the board? How can we start to leverage this? In a positive way, this program went on for, I think, 6 years, but it also made people take notice. And people started to ask questions, well, if I was teaching English careers and civics in this thing, could this work for math and science? What about English and history? Could this work in an elementary setting? And so we had all of these questions. And some of that still drives the thinking, but it's very innovative. And again, technology was just the thing that allowed it to happen. It was different. You can't do that kind of teaching and interacting simply with paper. The technology plays a role in the learning, but the learning's not about the technology. I also wanted to highlight this particular project. The lady on the left, Allison Bullock, and the gentleman on the right, Andy Baronsky, they came up with a really unique cross-panel collaborative project. Allison was a grade 4 French teacher in one of our elementary schools, and Andy's an English teacher at Huron Heights Secondary School. So Allison's class, the grade 4s, they were doing a project where they had to design an artifact that you would find in a museum. And then part of the assignment was they had to make the artifact, they had to research about it, and write the scripts. You know how when you wander through a museum, you can choose to hear about the thing you're looking at? Well, the kids had to do that research, They had to write a script in English and a script in French. They had to build their artifact. And in the grade four class, this would culminate by actually putting their classroom together like a museum at the end of the project. The role of Andy students were, they were looking at a leadership component in the high school curriculum. And so his students were actually partnered up with the elementary students, and they played the role of a facilitator. So they guided the students. They asked them questions about where are they getting their knowledge. If you thought about asking this, how would you explain that? What about this term? And the kids would go away and do some work. The kids didn't meet. They used Google Hangouts, video conferencing, to talk between the classes. What was really neat at the end, they actually, Andy got a school bus rented, and they took the high school kids to the elementary school, and at the end, on the museum day, the kids actually all met. And it was a real celebration because they recognized their partners, they had a relationship with those people. The high school kids actually got to see the artifacts that the elementary students made, and it was a real celebration kind of event. But of course, it's just an idea. Now this has been mushrooming out, and teachers are now experimenting with these new cross-panel things. What a great way to do collaborative learning and do it with people that aren't just the student that you've sat beside all year, or maybe multiple years in a similar class. So that's been pretty exciting. And this final one, I just want to talk a little bit about, this is again a secondary example, but it could happen, and it had lots of different grade levels. This project was put together by Jamie Rayburn, who's an English teacher, and her students were asking about the question that you're contemplating tonight. What does the future hold? How do we consider aligning education with where the future's going? Her students were interested in talking to people who were interested in influencing where education goes. So they came up with a plan, and Jamie called me and asked me to help facilitate it, which I was very pleased to do. In essence, what they did was they designed a panel discussion. None of the panelists were in the room. All of the panelists were online. So we had a Google Hangout with eight people. They decided to share their learning and what was happening in their classroom in a very visible way, so we actually broadcasted it live on YouTube so that other schools could watch the panel discussion. The students were responsible for researching the panelists, checking out their digital footprints. Were they bloggers? How did they behave online? They generated the questions to ask the panelists. As the panel was actually being executed on the day that it went live, students were also running a Twitter chat where people were sharing comments and questions. And so it was like a real world event with media tracking and so on. The really cool thing about it was the Ministry of Education actually picked it up as an exemplar project. And so the video of that project and some other things that were happening in her classroom were actually captured by the ministry. I do want to say, too, these are just a few examples, and I've given you a couple of secondary school ones, but they can happen in really multiple grade levels. But I do want to say that the Futures Forum project, the differentiated technology planning model that we use in the school board with our summer camps and these various specialized projects, and looking at helping people feel comfortable in trying new and innovative things and connecting it back to those digital literacies and so on. This work has actually been recognized, and we were really fortunate to be one of the international school board represented in a case study, and we actually have a little spot on the United States tech ed government thing under President Obama as a nice reference to Waterloo Region District School Board. So we come back to the question, what's the classroom of tomorrow look like? What should learning look like? It's hard to know. And I think in education right now, there's so many things that I would call in cross tensions. We need more of this, and there's others that say, no, we need less of this, and we should use more technology, less technology, more screen time, less screen time, more wellness, more fitness, yes, no. And there's lots of push and pull. And I think the truth of the matter is, We have to recognize where the world's going, but we have to find the balance. After all, it's important that we think about students as individuals. We recognize that students learn at different rates in different ways. We try to accommodate that through the learning process. We try to help each child find their passions. What are they interested in? How do they grow as a person? And the kinds of skills that we want, yes, traditional skills. You want to have kids in the system that have hope, that have ethics. They're honest. They're hardworking. They strive to be their best. But we have to somehow think about, how do we do that in today's world? And how do we also think about, what does that look like in the future, where we have this world of more automation, more technology, online relationships, flexible work hours. Maybe you're on a work team with somebody in another country, different time zones, all kinds of things that come into play. And I think the best thing we can do in education right now is think about keeping the balance. I know when I do these presentations, often people know me as the technology guy, and so there's often an emphasis on that, like tonight in the conversation, but I really do think we have to think about education in the broader perspective. We just want to make sure that when we use technology, it's used appropriately, that we take the right precautions, we have the right kind of equipment and bandwidth, teachers feel comfortable that they can get the training they need. And that's the way forward. But can we do that with a futuristic look? Can we be innovative in safe ways? Can we try some of these kinds of projects that are going on in the board more broadly? What kinds of things will your child be interested in? How do we help keep them engaged so that school's a great place to go to, that learning is fun, it's a passion, it's a joyful experience? Technology plays a role in that, but that's not the whole picture. And I think that's an important piece to realize. So, just to close out, we're right on the money for time here. Where we're at right now is incredibly exciting. There's so much change coming, so much opportunity, yet we have to value what we have, where we've come from, and try to position ourselves to be successful now and going forward. So we're definitely on a journey. So I'll end it there, and then if folks have some comments or questions, I'm happy to try to address them. So thanks very much again for inviting me here tonight.